Have you ever felt like you were speaking to somebody, maybe a group, individual, where they were missing the point? I'm sure we've all had that, right? If you're a parent, I'm for sure that you've given some lecture, you know, to your kids, and, you know, at the end they ask you some question that has nothing to do with what you just were talking about. And missing the point is a set of statements that factually lead to conclusion X, obvious, solid, factual path to conclusion X, yet conclusion Y is drawn. Pretty obvious. It's interesting. Wikipedia, you wouldn't think that this phrase or word would appear, but if you Google it, it doesn't come up missing the point. It comes up as irrelevant conclusion. That's the phrase that Wikipedia shows. This is what it says. An irrelevant conclusion, also known as ignoratio elenchi, Latin for ignoring refutation, or missing the point, is the informal fallacy of presenting an argument that may or may not be logically valid and sound, but whose conclusion fails to address the issue in question. We know what missing the point is. You fail to reach the right conclusion on a matter. We see that, unfortunately, all around us through misinformation and other means, but it's an obvious point. Let me give you an example, a simple one. A guy shows up to work late. His boss yells at him, "You should have been here at 8 o'clock. And the guy replies, what did I miss at 8 o'clock? You know, what happened? What did I miss? You know, he misses the point. He's supposed to be here at work 8 o'clock. In my profession as a home builder, I see this all the time. It's an interesting phenomenon for me personally, professionally. If I'm being interviewed to do a project, a home building project, you know, I'll go through a series of things that I feel are important. And every homeowner would say it's important, you know, structural integrity, quality of a project, energy performance, you know, how do you make a house perform well with energy, what type of windows, you know, low E, argon, glass, all the types of things that make a house perform, insulation, thickness of walls. I'll go through water filtration, you know, every drop of water, you know, we get from miles of pipes, and you know, you should address that if you're about to build a $1 million house, you know, address these issues, passive solar, take advantage of the sun's heating, seasonal changes, make a house that's low maintenance. You'll talk about all these really important big things, utilities and how to run them, how to use a house, how to age a house, where you can stay in a house. Aging in place, it's called. So as your person ages, making the house designed to accommodate them. Architectural appeal, you know, house should have a particular style. It shouldn't just be random, a hodgepodge of every little good idea that you come up with. Introducing or integrating technology into a house so that you don't build a house that's technologically obsolete the day you move in. You know, all these types of things, the construction process, cost, resale value, I'll talk about all these things. But 95 of 100 times, you know, you'll get questions like, well, how many paint colors do I get to choose? You know, you'll go through all this and the people, they miss the point. They'll be focused on how many paint colors do I, what type of doorknobs do I use? You know, you start to roll your eyes. It's like you're missing the point. You're focused on the wrong things. And it happens all the time. What is the most detailed prophetic discourse in the Bible? The most detailed prophetic discourse in Scripture. Anybody know what that is? Of course, it's a teaching that Christ gave the disciples. It's called the Olivet Prophecy. And it's interesting, the word or phrase, the Olivet Prophecy, appears nowhere in Scripture. That phrase has been added, if you will, just as a topic for an outline of the Scripture. You get nothing wrong of them by itself of using the phrase, the Olivet Prophecy. But it is interesting. We often misfocus, if you will, on Matthew 24 in the prophetic details, the conditions, the signs that are contained in Matthew 24. And that's important. Please make no mistake. I'm not saying that these are not important. They are. But sometimes we do that because really what we're asking is, I want to know when Christ will return. What are the signs so that I know when to get ready? I mean, if we're being truthful, I can get my ideas for myself. Well, if I know what's happening and when Christ will return, then at some point, just in advance of that, I can get my life situated, get straight, get serious about my calling, get on board with things, and sprint towards the finish. That's part of what we're thinking. At least it is for me. We want to know the answer, and so did the disciples. We can desire to focus primarily, I'm not saying exclusively, but primarily on those details, the prophetic events, the timeline, the when and what will be the evidence or the sign of Christ's return. And that, of course, can lead to date setting. I mean, we're as guilty as any organization, historically speaking, about date setting. Oh, it's going to happen here. It's going to happen when? We've never been right, have we? No. Okay, well, we focus on dates, we focus on the politics, the world events, conditions, and again, there is an element of that we must be serious about, and we'll talk about that briefly. But we want to focus on world news. Well, we can focus on world news 2 hours a day and never once crack the Bible. Open scripture, right? We can be so focused on the wrong things, the signs, the evidence of what precedes Christ's return, that we miss what Christ was really trying to tell us in the Olivet Prophecy. That's what we're going to look at today. And unfortunately, as we've seen this, and we'll continue to see it, and prophetically the scriptures tell us that the more we or any group of people focus on the signs, the wonders, the events, the news, the personality, the politics, the more prone we are to deception. The more prone we are to deception, because we will have missed the point of Christ's sermon that he gave on the Olivet Mountain. Again, he gave a sermon. Again, we title it as man or as the producers of different Bibles, the Olivet Prophecy, which again is not in there. It's really an Olivet sermon. He gave a sermon, on the Mount of Olives. And that sermon was not focused specifically on all these signs and wonders. Again, he covered them. He gave us the outline, certainly important. But if we look at the entirety of that sermon he gave, it is clear that Christ had a different focus. His focus, he was gracious, he was kind, he answered the disciples' question of what will be the signs. But Christ's focus was something else, and that was making sure that we, through all generations, were spiritually prepared for his imminent return. And we'll see that today. And it's amazing how many times he said that. He slapped us with the facts of that at least 10 times in this Olivet Prophecy. Again, Olivet Sermon, if you will. And it's an amazing thing to see. So again, the greatest spiritual messages or goals of the Olivet Prophecy are all meant to prepare us for his return. All the details don't specifically prepare us. If we read through those details, and we will, ask yourself, if I know or see that event, did that event help prepare me spiritually? Not of them by itself. It doesn't do anything. So again, we'll look at how Christ intended the greatest spiritual message in the Olivet Sermon is that we all need to prepare for his return. I want to look at the Olivet Prophecy, Olivet Sermon, if you will, and kind of set the timeline here, the stage or the context for which it was given, because it says a lot about the importance of this message, the importance of Christ's message to his disciples. So again, the first thing before he gave this sermon on Mount of Olives, Matthew 23 verse 1, you don't necessarily need to turn there, but all of Matthew 23 for that matter, is he's giving a condemnation at the temple. Let me just read Matthew 23 verse 1. Then Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples. So he's speaking to the public, everybody who's there that will listen. So he's speaking to everybody. Verse 2 saying, the scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. And then he goes on, and we know it, woe to you scribes and Pharisees. And he hammers them. So he takes the political and religious leaders, society, he's at Washington, D.C., if you will, and he lets it rip. he tells them, hey, you know, you sit Moses' seat, but woe to you scribes, woe to you Pharisees. He condemns them politically, condemns them religiously, condemns Israel as a nation for not fulfilling their part of the covenant. He really lets it go. So again, that's part of the context for which this message appears. Verse 33 of Matthew 23, again, just an example. Serpents, brood of vipers, how can you escape the condemnation of hell, the grave? That's pretty strong. That's pretty strong. So that's the context. Right before he gives this sermon, if you will, to his disciples. Then Matthew 24, verse 1, it talks about, it mentions the place that this all happened. Matthew 24, verse 1, then Jesus went out, again, from that condemnation of the scribes and Pharisees in Israel, and departed from the temple. And his disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. He's saying, you know, this whole system, both political and civil, is going away. And he condemned it. So again, that's the context. Verse 3, now as he sat on the Mount of Olives, again, hence the Olivet prophecy. Again, it doesn't say prophecy. It's a sermon that he gives. Now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. So again, now he's speaking to his disciples, his followers, those that believe, accept who he is. And he gives this message. But again, he condemned the world, so to speak, just before this. The disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when will these things be and what will be the sign of your coming in the end of the age? Of course, the significance of the Mount of Olives, a long history there. But it's interesting, you know, the resurrected Christ. So once Christ was crucified, ascended, returned back to earth, he returned, of course, to the Mount of Olives. When he ascended to his Father, he left from the Mount of Olives. And of course, that's where he will return. It's a significant piece of real estate. And that's where he gives this sermon to his disciples. So again, we see the time, the sequence of events, and the environment where he was physically is interesting. It adds to the credibility, to the significance, to the magnitude, to the emphasis, because this is where he gave this message. After this sermon to his disciples, Matthew 26, verse 1, again, we're going to focus on Matthew 24, Matthew 25, but Matthew 26, after he concludes the sermon on Mount Olivet, or the Mount of Olives. Matthew 26, verse 1. Now it came to pass when Jesus had finished all these sayings, so he finishes his sermon, that he said to his disciples, you know that after 2 days is the Passover, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified. So 2 days before his crucifixion, whatever he says is pretty important, right? This is at the last moments that he's here with his disciples. And he gives this sermon on the Mount of Olives, focusing on, again, when, the signs, but something more importantly that we often overlook. So he's on this particular piece of real estate. He just condemns the world, the civil authorities, the religious authorities, speaking to his disciples, and he gives this sermon. And it's so critical that we see what he was really trying to get across. When I think of Matthew 24, I think of it as prophecy. And we quote it, and we're going to go just briefly touch on some of the phrases in here. And all of them will ring a bell, because we hear them all the time. And again, rightly so, it's important. So in the Olivet prophecy, in the Olivet sermon, Christ gives 5 end-time Christian goals. And the title of this message today, if you're taking notes and like titles, it's end-time Christian goals. Because he gives very, very specific points about what we should be focusing on. Even though the disciples wanted to know when and what are the signs, he's gracious. He answers those questions, but he really spends the bulk of his time, his words, and meaning on these end time Christian goals, of course, intended to make sure that we get prepared. So here's what the disciples asked, Matthew 24, verse 3. Matthew 24, verse 3. Now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? So again, notice their questions. They don't ask, as I probably wouldn't either, Christ, what do we do to get ready? How do we get prepared? What should our focus be, Christ? What should our goals be? They ask the obvious, probably humanly speaking, the questions we would ask. When and what will it look like? What will be the signs that precede your coming? Again, they are important questions. Please don't misunderstand that. I'm not saying it's not important. It is. As you see these five goals, that part of it is included, but much, much more. So again, they ask when and what will be the signs. So Christ, again, graciously, he starts to answer in verse 4. So he's answering what will be the signs. He answers that first. And Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you. So he starts right off the bat, don't be deceived. And he goes on to show what the signs are. Why? Because the signs, truthfully, are where the potential for deception comes in. If you're prepared, super prepared, you're an A-plus Christian, deception's not a real problem for you. But focusing on signs can be a problem. We can flip through church history and prove that. I'm going to focus on all these things, these algorithms, these dates, these calendars, these cycles, these signs, world events. And then I'll know when Christ is going to return. I think a lot of that's driven by the fact that we want to know so we can jump and get a head start. We'll start then to really get ready. And Christ, I think, knows that, obviously. And he gives a much broader, much more important answer. So let me just read. I'm just going to skim through the signs. All these we recognize and we hear over and over. Verse 5, deceive many. Verse 6, wars and rumors of wars. Verse 7, kingdom against kingdom. That doesn't help me much, truthfully, right? That doesn't help me get ready. But he's answering the question. Famines, pestilences, and earthquakes. Broad in nature. Verse 9, tribulation, hated by all nations. Verse 10, offended, will betray one another. Verse 11, false prophets. Verse 12, lawlessness will abound. The love of many will grow cold. Again, important indicators. Please don't misunderstand this. These are good indicators. It's good to know that. He's answering the question. Verse 13. Of course, a very key passage. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. Verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations. And then the end will come. Again, it's still broad. It's important. Obviously, we've got to endure to the end. Verse 15. He's continuing with the details. The details of the signs that will precede his coming. Verse 15, the abomination of desolation. Verse 21, great tribulation. Verse 24, false Christs and false prophets. That's the fourth time we've heard about deception already. Four times about deception. And those are embedded into watching the signs. Watching the signs. He's four times now, he's warned about deception. Verse 21, verse 24, false Christs and false prophets. Verse 29, sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven. Verse 30, then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Verse 31, kind of a pivotal verse, which is actually today, so to speak, 2021, this is kind of where we're at, the time frame. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet. We just, of course, observed the Feast of Trumpets. So we're in this time frame, prophetically speaking, in the recording of Matthew 24. And they will gather together, again, the Feast of Trumpets, his elect from the four winds from one end of heaven to the other. And then, of course, the kingdom begins. So again, we recognize all those phrases. But which of those phrases, again, it's important to watch. I understand it's important to see political and social events. But which of them actually made you more prepared as the bride of Christ? Which of them actually made you more prepared to be kings and priests and rulers in the kingdom? To be more converted, to be more humble, to grow in character? Again, they can, obviously, because they could be motivators. But with that can also be a lot of time. I could literally turn on the news if I chose to and watch all day long and speculate about this world event is this. Here's where we are in the scheme of the time frame. Oh, it looks like in the next 5 years, you know, this is going to happen. And this COVID thing's going to turn out to be the pestilence that never goes away. And we can conjecture and get lost in that type of information and never once get more spiritually prepared. And never once really focus on what Christ was trying to get across in the answer that he gave. Then Christ, of course, answers the original question of when. He doesn't ignore them. He answered the signs first, and then he answers the question of when, the disciples' question. But there's a change in tone. There's a change in purpose in how he gives this answer. The first thing he does, which we'll see, is he tells us we can know the season. He tells us that. You know, God is not going to, in that sense, give us the date. I don't know why specifically. Probably because of human nature. I'll speak for myself. I'm going to take that date back off another year, and I'm going to be praying, studying, reading every day. I'm going to get ready for that date. But until then, I'm going to cruise. I don't know if that's the reason. Human nature, I'm sure that's part of it. But he does tell us the season we will know. We will know. Verse 32 of Matthew 24. Now learn this. So all the other answers were not ambiguous, but they were generic. They were general phrases. You know, kingdom against kingdom, famines, pestilences. I mean, those have been going on for a long time. Of course, we know there'll be an increased activity in these things. And we don't know exactly which one is which and which event we can tie exactly to certain key things. There's a lot of unknowns there. They're signs. They're not answers. They're not commitments. They're not guarantees of things. They're signs of things. And that's where the deception can come in. But in verse 32, he says, now learn this. You can know this. That's what Christ is telling us. And he wants us to know this, to learn this. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know, that's emphatic. You know that summer is near. Verse 33. So you also, when you see all these things, know, again, we see the word know, that it is near at the doors. Verse 34. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all of these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. What's interesting, and I've got it highlighted in red here in my notes, but if you look at all the time words, words that are descriptive for time, just in what we read, verse 32 through verse 35, we see when, summer, near, when, near, generation, till. All those words are time-oriented words. He's answering the question, but we'll see as we go through this, the answer is not what the disciples would have wanted, right? If he had told them, oh, by the way, disciples, it won't be till 2037 or whatever the year may be. Do you think the disciples, they thought, I believe, as we can look at other writings, they believed it was their lifetime. It probably has something to do with how we would otherwise respond. Again, I'm being honest, right? If you told me as a disciple back in, 30 AD, it's not going to be till 2037 or whatever that year might be. That changes everything. He's answering the question. Again, I read through this. Think of all the time words that Christ is using. He ends up using 29 different time words. It's a lot. It's a lot of words referencing time. But the answer that he integrates into those words is what's important. Verse 36. But of that day and hour, no one knows. Well, that's pretty poignant, isn't it? In my notes, I've got 10 times or 10 ways he tells us that same thing. That's my number one. No one, but of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. You want to know when? You don't know. I don't know. We'll know the season, What we don't know, there's number one, and he's going to beat it 10 times. You don't know, so don't focus on that so much. Again, we still have to focus on it. Focus on these other things. And I think, again, for myself, I miss the other things because he gives us five goals to focus on. Verse 37, but as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. They did not know until. That's my number two. He's telling us, you know, one day it's sunny, they're marrying, they're eating, they're having a barbecue, they're out having fun, they're going to work. They're doing all these things, just like the day before and the day before and the day before. They didn't know till the first raindrop hit. They probably didn't know then, until the rain was maybe falling for an hour. Huh, that's not a little unusual. We don't normally get rains that long. 3 hours later, they're starting to sweat and they're starting to worry, right? They didn't know till that day. He's told us already the second time now, you won't know. It'd be just like Noah. They didn't know until the day Noah entered that ark. That's a pretty strong point. Just tell us, you don't know the day or the hour. So don't be so tied up in it. Verse 39, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away. So really I should say, they didn't know till the water started rising. So also will the coming of the Son of Man be. It says it right there. Christ's return, it'll be like things are fairly normal, right? It doesn't seem normal with a pestilence or a pandemic. It doesn't seem normal if you go back and read all these signs that he just gave. But he's telling us that the signs can lead to deception. Be prepared. If it were so obvious, we would just wait to the obvious sign and get ready. I would. I mean, you say, well, that's not right. You should want to have a relationship with God. I do want to have a relationship. I do want to do the right things. But my human nature tells me it's like a deadline. Anybody here ever procrastinate? Is there anybody in here that's never procrastinated? No. We all procrastinate. They know that. God knows that. The Father knows that. Christ knows that. You're not going to let us procrastinate. He tells us for the second time, right here, did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. That's pretty important. Verse 40, then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. That's the third time. He's saying it's so sudden, they're out there working. I've heard people, they use this for rapture and say, boom, you know, it means rapture, they'll be instantly taken. Again, that in one sense could be true for those with Holy Spirit. But the intention in context is that they're out grinding, they're out working. It's so sudden that one's taken, one's not. That's an element that Christ is getting across for the third time now, the suddenness at which this all happens. At a time frame that we could not specifically plan for. So we have to plan like it's today, it's tomorrow. Each of us, that return of Christ could be next hour, right? Let's drive out of here, killed in a car accident. So it's irrelevant, the when, the specific day and time. You know, it could be that God and Christ have delayed it for on behalf of the church. Maybe it was supposed to happen years ago and it didn't. We don't know. We won't know the exact day and the hour. We'll know the season. That's all he wants us to know. If he wanted for us to know more, he would tell us. He'd send us an email, right? And tell us, but he hasn't. So I want to look at, again, so he's answered the question of when in a big time frame. He said, you'll know the season and that's it. You will not know the day or the hour. And he emphasizes it. We've already looked at three ways that he's done that. But from here on, we'll look at, he continues to answer the question, but he gives us specific goals. Again, five end time Christian goals, as I've entitled this this sermon. But it's, of course, to be contrasted with the misdirected focus on when. So when you see these goals, you'll see that the focus is never about when. And Christ gives us these points. It's his words, not mine. He says, don't focus too much on the when. Focus on these things instead. So goal number one, and I've tried to reduce these to one word apiece. one word of peace. So goal number one of five is watch. So again, it is important to watch the signs, watch world events. Let's read that in verse 42. We're still in Matthew 24. Verse 42. So again, he just gave us the broad point of you'll know the season, but you won't know the day or the hour. And he said it three different ways. So he's already given us that. But he says, verse 42, watch therefore. So as a result of what I've just told you, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. Well, there's number four. That's the fourth time he said, you won't know the day or the hour. But watch. That's important. Watch, because you're not going to know the day or the hour. Verse 43, but know this. Again, you can know this. This is important. That if the master of the house had known what hour, that's the fifth time. The master doesn't know the hour. That's by analogy, by example, the fifth time already that Christ has said, you won't know. Just like the master doesn't know when a thief is coming, he doesn't know. If he knew, he'd wait up and prevent the break-in, right? If the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. It's such an obvious point. But again, that's the fifth time now Christ has said, you don't know and you won't know. So get prepared. So watch. Be prepared. The word watch, again, I think of it as more specific to watching world events, watching prophecy, watching, you know, news and watch politics. Keep your thumb on the pulse of things. The word watch in the Greek means literally stay awake. Figuratively, be vigilant, responsible, or watchful. It doesn't necessarily mean that we just sit down in front of the TV plugged into five different news channels. Maybe we set up five screens, you know, BBC and, you know, Europe, and we just drink it in, you know. No, watch really means stay awake. Be awake. That to me is totally different than focus on these signs that he told us, which are not ambiguous, but somewhat ambiguous, right? They also said deception can happen. If somebody sends you a brochure, sends you an email saying, hey, I know when. I know I've put this all these things together. I've counted time cycles and I've done all this. There's been lots of deception tied to those signs that Christ gave. And he gave four warnings that there'll be more deception. So again, we have to be awake. Stay awake. Be vigilant. Be responsible. And that includes watching world events and so forth. But it's, of course, much, much more. So the first goal is that we watch. The second goal, we'll begin reading in verse 44. The second goal is preparedness. Preparedness. Be ready if you like that better, but I was trying to get one word for each of these. Preparedness. Verse 44. Therefore, again, he's drawing another conclusion from the answer that he gave. Therefore, as a result of these things I've already said, you also be ready. Be ready. For the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. There's number six. He's wearing it out. Six times he's already told us, you're not going to know the day or hour, but you better be watching, being vigilant, you know, more than just watching world events, and be ready. And the word ready in the Greek means ready because prepared. Ready doesn't mean, well, I'm going to be a stockpiler. You know, I'm going to have food rations. I'm going to have all this stuff. I'm not saying anything specifically wrong with having some of that for any set of circumstances, but it means you're ready because you're prepared. Preparedness. Christ tells us, be prepared. And he reminds us right there, you're not going to know otherwise. Coming at an hour you do not expect. What do you mean I don't expect it? I thought all these signs would be so obvious. I mean, if things are blowing up and there's just all kinds of chaos, wouldn't I be expecting it? Again, it's like the frog in the water. I don't know the answer to that. At some point, you know, things continue to deteriorate. But God sees the world differently. You know, we look at the world around us. God sees everything on the earth. If I went today and spent an hour taking YouTube videos, clips from today's date all over the world, it would look just like everything we're reading. Pestilence, disease, starvation, tribulation against nation. wars, rumors of wars. I mean, you don't think you'd find videos that, I mean, how many people are going to die today of starvation? I don't know. I know it's a lot. I mean, so these things are important, but they're not the focus that God gave us. They're to help us be prepared. And a wise, prudent Christian will look at those things and say, okay, this is a part, this is an ingredient to the answer, and I've got to watch. I've got to be cognizant of what's going around us. But it's not the focus. The focus is watching and preparedness so far, two of those things. And again, so far, just out of curiosity, I've read 17 time words. You know, so from the other passage where I stopped, again, we've said day, hour, days, until, day, days, until, hour, hour. He's answering the question. So far we've read 17 time words. He's hammering it, but as he's hammering the answer, he's telling us not the time, not the day, not the hour, but he's telling us what's important. Watch and be prepared. Verse 45, it's interesting. You know, the disciples asked, what are the signs and when? Christ gives his question in verse 45. Verse 45 of Matthew 24. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? During the delay. That's really what he's saying, right? During this delay, who is the faithful and wise servant? Verse 3. It begins to answer that. Verse 46, Matthew 24, is what in my notes, the third goal. So again, Christ gave us the goal of watching, of being prepared. The third goal is work. Is work. And that's not just doing the work of preaching the gospel. Certainly includes that. It's more than just that. It's if you knew that Christ was returning in 6 months, 12 days, and 6 hours, I'm quitting my job. Why would I go? I'm not going to keep working. I'm done. I'm checking out. I'm not going to use my talents, my abilities, and skills. I'm not going to be, you know, honing skills at my employer, taking the employer's punches on the chin with feasts and holy days, working. I'm going to sleep in every day. You know, we would change the way we live. Christ tells us to work. Certainly preach the gospel as a part of that work. But it's, almost everything we can learn involves work. What religious Christian principle can we learn without work? Think about that sometime. It'd be a series of messages. Studying your Bible takes work. It takes scheduling. It takes energy. It takes enthusiasm. It takes sitting down, focus. It takes a lot of things. Serving a church, it takes time. It takes work, right? Serving, it's another word for work. Energy and time, force and distance. It takes work. Verse 46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when, another time word, when he comes, will find so doing. Verse 47. I assuredly, again, he's emphasizing, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. Christ tells us right there, so doing. Again, two words, simple. The word so means in this way, in this manner, in accordance with this description. So again, he already gave a description. And doing means to make, manufacture, construct, do, act, or cause. It doesn't mean just preaching the gospel. Blessed is that servant who finds he's so doing. We're working. We're being productive. We're working at church. We're serving at church. We're doing lots of things. But still, it's broader than just doing one thing. Well, the church preaches the gospel. That meets my part of doing work. So I'm done. And if I knew when Christ was returned, I probably would, I'd just say I'm done. I mean, if you come back in 3 years, do I have enough money to make it 3 years? If I do, I quit work. No. When he returns, the day he returns, we're still going to be working, presumably, hopefully. Will find so doing. He gives a contrast to emphasize it. Verse 48. But if that evil servant, not doing the right job, says in his heart, my master is delaying, another time word, delaying his coming, and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him. He's not even looking for him. Of course, the righteous person is looking for him. Speaking of an evil person, I'm not even looking for him. And at an hour that he's not aware. Now, all of us won't know the hour, but the evil person's not even looking, not even anticipating Christ's return. That's the difference. Because that's really this the seventh time and at an hour that he is not aware. He said, well, that only applies to the wicked servant. No, it applies to everybody. It's and. An evil person won't be anticipating Christ's return. And by the way, like the rest of us, he won't know the day or the hour either. That's the seventh time now in context with only a few verses that Christ has emphasized the idea that we don't know the day or the hour. So work. So work. I mean, I know people back in the, you know, 70s, 80s, you know, stopped getting dental work, you know, didn't have a health conditions address because they thought Christ was returning. That sounds bizarre, doesn't it, looking back? I'm sure you've all heard those types of stories. It almost seems insane. And it is insane because we're doing exactly what Christ told us not to do. Don't focus on the day and the time because you won't know. Focus on watching, focus on preparedness, and focus on working. Continuing in verse 51, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I mean, that's a severe, severe warning. We've got to keep working. Keep doing good. Keep using abilities and talents. Do those things. Of course, the disciple, the servant of God, believes and anticipates Christ's return and faithfully carries out the master's orders, which include these points that we're covering. The evil servant just doesn't think Christ is going to return anytime soon. He's delaying his coming, so why bother? Why bother go to church? I'll be watching world events. They'll give me a clue, and I'll start to go to church 5 years from now. There are people out there thinking that. I can assure you that. Maybe they're getting our publications. Oh, I'm not going to commit to this because it's a Saturday every week. It's all the holy days, all these things. I'll tune in. I'll know when Christ is going to return, and then I'll get my game on at that point. Matthew 25, of course, the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. And he just continues to emphasize through this parable the idea of watching and being ready, of preparedness. We'll go ahead and read through Matthew 25, beginning of verse 1. Again, continuing, he's still on this sermon. It's still the same message. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, again, another time word, it's not when you expected. We expected him back this time. He's delayed till who knows when. It's another sign, another important word. They all slumbered and slept. It's interesting. It says they all slumbered and slept. It doesn't mean that they were all unprepared, though. Verse 6, and at midnight, to me that's the eighth time that Christ tells us, at midnight, well, between those two passages, it's at a time unexpected. He wasn't anticipated to show up at midnight roaming around Judea in the dark. It was unexpected. It was a delay. And at midnight, that's the eighth clue or eighth time he said, you're not going to know when. We expected him back at 4 o'clock, you know, as the sun was setting. And it's been much later than that. And at midnight, a cry was heard. Behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves. Verse 10, and while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready. Those who were ready. Those who were ready because prepared. Went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Again, he's emphasizing the point of being ready. Preparedness, spiritually speaking. Verse 13, watch therefore. As a result of what I just said, Christ is telling us, watch. So he's emphasizing watch and preparedness. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. That's the ninth time he's effectively said the exact same thing. Nine times so far. You won't know the day or the hour, so watch, be prepared, work. The fourth goal given is stewardship. Stewardship. Again, I used that word to combine several things. Of course, the parable of the talents tells us that, which is also in this Olivet prophecy, Olivet sermon, if you will. It's telling us to use our gifts, our talents, our abilities, our resources profitably. It's not just one thing. It's using what we've been given. We know all good things come from God, and he tells us to keep using them. Again, if I knew that Christ was returning at an X date, that changes. I quit going to college. Why? I quit doing certain things. Why bother? Christ doesn't want that to happen. So goal four is stewardship. Continuing in verse 14 of Matthew 25. Verse 14 of Matthew 25. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave five talents, to another two, and to another one, to each according to his own ability. It's an interesting phrase, own ability. And immediately he went on a journey. Then when he had received the five talents, then he who had received the five talents went and traded with them and made another five talents. Verse 17, and likewise he who had received two gained two more also. But he who had received one went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. Verse 19, after a long time, there's number 10, wasn't when he expected it. It's after a long time. It's telling us it's not when we think. The Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. You know, settle up. We're going to do an accounting here of what you've been doing with the talents, the resources, the abilities, the gifts that I've given you. And you didn't know the date, so you don't have the excuse of saying, well, I sandbagged. I kind of waited to. No, you're going to keep on trucking, keep on working, keep swimming upstream, keep doing all the things that you're supposed to do to the day, because you don't know when that day or hour is. It's just the same thing with, until the flood came. Boom, you don't know, so you keep on doing what you're supposed to be doing. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. Verse 20, so he had received five talents, came and brought five other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me five talents. Look, I have gained five more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. Because he's answering the question, who is a good and faithful servant who he made ruler over his goods? He's still answering part of that question. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Again, God's going to give us, we talk about giving cities or giving responsibility or being kings and priests in the future. You know, what it takes to do that, I suspect, doesn't include the person who says, you know what, I knew Christ was returning in 6 years and 10 days, and I mailed it in and quit. I just gave it up. I went and got racked up on my credit cards. Man, I lived like a king. I didn't care because I knew exactly when he's coming. You know, I stay home and pray and study all day, but I dropped everything else. That's the kind of leader you want managing in the kingdom? Of course not. All this is with purpose. God has purpose in what he tells us. Often, even in a good scripture, Matthew 24, we focus on all these things, the signs, but we forget what he's really trying to tell us, and that is to watch, to be prepared, to work, and to focus on stewardship. Verse 22, he also who had received two talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me two talents. Look, I have gained. Again, there's a gain. There's productivity there. I've gained two more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Verse 24, just to go ahead and cover this, it gives a contrast. Contrast to being a good steward, to being productive with what's been given to us. Verse 24, then he who had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid. Of course, an anti-faith, if you will. I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. Verse 26, but his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Again, we see all those words, sown, gather, lazy. It's about work. Where I have not scattered seed, verse 27, so you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. Why? You want to get something done, take it and give it to the busiest guy out there, because he'll get it done. That's true in business. You know, oh, this guy's too busy. Give this guy over here as a poor performer and let him prove himself. And again, that can work sometimes, but most often, he's a poor performer, he'll be a poor performer. Give to the guy who's busy because he'll get it done. He'll manage it. He'll manage a result. That's what Christ tells us. Verse 29 kind of summarizes, for to everyone who has, who's done well, who's achieving, who's overcoming, who's working, more will be given. And he will have abundance, but from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And that's in this Sermon on the Mount. I'm sorry, Sermon on the Mount of Olives. It's an important warning. God, Christ, he expects us to produce with our gifts, our talents, money, resources, possessions. Do you share? Do you use your possessions to the benefit of others? And your energy, and most importantly, time. That's the greatest resource we all have. Oh, no, I don't do anything with God's people. I just spend it on myself. You know, I shop for myself. I game with myself. I sleep in. I do all the stuff for myself. I'm not productive. I'm not fruitful as it concerns other people. That's not what God's looking for. He tells us that. Goal number five. Service. Goal number five, service. Verse 31 of Matthew 25. Verse 31, Matthew 25, of course, very specifically referencing Christ's return and the judgment that will occur. When a Son of Man comes in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. Verse 32, all the nations will be gathered before him and he will separate them, the people, one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. He will set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, come you, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundations of the world. That's now, the kingdom we're about to picture, the feast that we're about to celebrate. Verse 35, for I was hungry and you gave, that's a pretty important word, gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. Another important phrase. Verse 36. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Verse 37. Then the righteous will answer him saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and came to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Service. Are we serving? All those things described are service. Again, it's a partial list, obviously. Christ doesn't enumerate every little thing that we can do, but we serve those who have needs. Verse 41, he gives a contrast again to emphasize it. Then he will also say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Ouch. That's stout right there. Verse 42. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger and you did not take me in. Naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. Verse 44. Then they also will answer him saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, it did not minister to you? The word minister, of course, means serve, service. When did we want to serve? Verse 45, then he will answer them saying, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. And that's the end of that sermon that Christ gave on the Mount of Olives. Serve. Goal number 5 was serve. Of course, Christ's disciples will be growing in self-serving sacrifice, in love. 1 John 3, verse 16 says, by this we know love because he laid down his life for us, and we all also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. If we're not serving people, how can that be? How can we be preparing for the kingdom? No, God, I'm focused on when. I'm focused on that news event I read yesterday, because is that the sign? Is that it? I don't want to serve people. That takes too much energy and time and planning and resources and so forth and so on. No, God is very specific in these messages. He gives us these points. So you can change the wording of these goals if you care to. But they're there. We just read them. So again, are we focused on the right things, or are we missing the point? I started with that idea. We miss the point sometimes. I want to focus on when. What are the signs? What's the time? What's the time? God tells us, focus on these 5 things and you'll be okay. Because when for you could be the next waking moment. The Olivet prophecy, better yet, the Olivet sermon, is the most detailed prophetic teaching that Christ gave his disciples. And that includes us. We often miss the key point. Again, it's an important point, the signs, but it's not the key point. We often miss the key point and focus on Matthew 24 and its prophetic details, the signs, in an attempt to answer the question of when will Christ return and establish his kingdom, or if we're not doing so well spiritually, and if we're being truthful, we're asking, when will Christ return and establish his kingdom so I know when to start getting ready? I mean, if that's how you feel about it, then you got to take stock of your condition. I find myself thinking that sometimes. Hey, if I only knew, you know, that'd be great. It could be tomorrow. It could be today for us as individuals. But it's important, of course. Christ repeatedly answered our question by directing our attention on spiritually preparing for his return and our leadership roles in his kingdom by focusing daily on the 5 goals of watching, preparedness, working, stewardship, and service. Let's always focus on these 5 end-time Christian goals.